Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Assalamu alaikum, dan salam, sejahtera. Thank you for this wonderful welcome. Thank you to the people of Jakarta, and thank you to the people of Indonesia. Pulang kampung ni.
And after speaking Indonesian to the Indonesians, President Obama travels to South Korea for a visit with that country's leaders and the G20 Economic Summit. The stop in South Korea is interesting in various ways, and one of them for me is that he's trying to open the borders to more American cars. Usually this means knocking down tariffs, but I gather it's not a tariff issue in this case. He's trying to do that by getting South Korea to lower its pollution standards, because the higher fuel efficiency standards are why American cars can't compete there. So let's talk about this with Sewell Chan, who is on the trip with President Obama. He joins us from Indonesia for the New York Times. Hi, Sewell. Can you hear me? Hello from New York.
Hi, I'm in South Korea. How are you?
Oh, Brian? Now you are in South Korea. And from Bloomberg Business Week here in New York, Robin Farzad. Hi, Robin.
Hi, Brian.
So do I have that right, Sewell? Is that the issue, higher fuel efficiency standards than American cars are actually built with?
Well, there is this issue of a certain tension between the efficiency standards that the that various states and the federal government have been seeking, and the desire for economic competitiveness and to increase exports. And I think that's one of the things that they're struggling to resolve. The Detroit auto industry has been divided on this issue, with GM largely favorable to this free trade agreement, and Chrysler and Ford in particular opposed.
Robin, you want to dig down on that? Chrysler and Ford opposed, but GM in favor of a free trade agreement that has to do with their products?
Yeah, GM could be a bit of a freeloader in this case. It's a quasi-governmental organization. It's about to get floated again, and it can't be as, it can't be, I think, as vociferous as Ford, which I think in many respects is leading the opposition here. But it's not just an auto issue. I think a lot of this is tied up in the vagaries of certain stipulations about beef exports, efficiency, how you as a Democratic president who just got a midterm election rebuke, balance the interests of the exporters in the United States, almost a cross-partisan coalition, versus those of individual states that have their vested interests in, for example, seeing tariffs on beef drop. So the devil, I think, is really in the details here.
But on the car emissions question, looking at the Wall Street Journal right now, Robin, it says U.S. negotiators Tuesday pushed South Korea to exempt automakers that sell a small number of cars in the country from its fuel efficiency and emission standards, attempting to break a deadlock that has kept their free trade agreement in limbo for 3 years. So it sounds like what President Obama risks being known for in South Korea is asking them to allow more pollution so Ford can sell more cars there.
Yes, that is. I mean, that's the frustrating thing. And I think the big behind-the-scenes player in this is Hyundai, which used to be a punchline. You used to hear about it on the Leno show with Johnny Carson, I think, in the late 80s. And it's become now one of the a true thorn in the side of the big three, the big two and a half in Detroit. And it's being a company that can, really represent South Korea arriving as an emerging market turned a developed market that makes cars here in the United States that are fuel efficient, that people really want. And I think that the automakers, who have been behind, obviously, on the fuel efficient standards here in Detroit, want some manner of reciprocity. We want to be able to sell into this booming economy where people have disposable income. So why don't you bring down the regulations? And it's tricky for a Democratic president who also purports to back fuel efficiency standards.
The punchline used to be Hyundai. Now the punchline is NBC, at least on Conan.
Right.
But Sewell, Barack Obama was critical of many free trade agreements as a senator and as a candidate. Was this always an exception, South Korea, or did he change his tune in office?
I think you could argue that there was a change in tone, if not tune. definitely the tone softened. I think one of the real reasons is that the economy has worsened so much and that exports are seen as one of the only, you know, painless ways to grow, if you will. Clearly returning to an economy that's based on high leveraging, high borrowing, consumption, you know, going into more debt, that's not going to work, right? That's the consensus now. And so this idea of, like, expanding the manufacturing base and improving the industrial base to strengthen American exports, that will also contribute to a reduction in these global imbalances that you're hearing about that have been so destabilizing and have been exemplified by these trade and currency frictions.
Do the Republican victories in the midterm elections give further impetus to getting this trade deal done, Sewell?
Oh, I definitely think that's the case. You know, trade is not always it's often not a typically partisan issue because it's much more regional and sector specific. But in this case, I think the Republicans have been quite favorable to these three pending free trade agreements, partly because the Bush administration negotiated them. But also partly because they see them as beneficial overall for economic growth. There's obviously a lot of concerns, not only by Ford, but also by labor unions and quite a few Democratic politicians, though. So the politics cut both ways.
And, Robin, you mentioned beef as being another commodity that's at issue here. There were riots in 2003 over U.S. beef imports to South Korea.
Yeah, Brian, I also have to be careful about talking about, you know, international food proclivities on your show. I got in trouble recently. But obviously, the Koreans are a voracious consumer of American beef, but with a huge asterisk attached. There were riots in 2008 when the perception was, you know, the United States was free to offload some of its mad cow-tainted beef. And after that, I think, you know, the beef producers were willing to, by and large, export the majority of their cattle as being, you know, less than 30 months, the type that the young ones that don't have as much susceptibility to mad cow disease. And now you have someone like Max Baucus of Montana saying, we're not even going to debate this on the Hill unless you bring down that 30-month-old or less prohibition on beef. So this is very tricky. The United States has had, really, it's one of the success stories, is U.S. beef exports to Korea are more than a half a billion dollars this year, and that's double what we saw last year. But the Koreans would chafe at the idea of the United States having unfettered access to their beef market.
I have no idea what that international food consumption reference that got you into trouble may have been on this show. But, Sewell, it's almost unimaginable in this country, riots over beef imports. Was there a deeper subtext, or was it all fear over mad cow, which apparently was unfounded because nobody in this country is getting mad cow disease from eating U.S. beef as far as we know?
Yeah, the politics of sort of food intervention are really interesting. You know, the Europeans have been very concerned about genetically modified foods. That's much less of a concern in the United States. And, you know, my sense in Korea, it's a couple of things. I mean, this is a very heavily beef-eating society, frankly. And, the agricultural sector in many countries is a sort of source of particularly kind of emotional valence and power for people. And I think you combine that with, you know, the kind of fears over mad cow BSE back in 2008, and produced these really explosive riots. I think at one point there was a protester who killed himself in protest over this issue. So it sort of showed how emotional it had become.
Robin, the U.S. has a $10 billion trade deficit with South Korea. What do they sell us, and what do we sell them?
The Koreans sell us all manner of electronics. They have a big industrial complex, the Chaebol, these huge conglomerates that ship components, everything from small cheap parts to extremely high-tech parts that we find in earth movers and digging equipment. Korea has really, really, truly arrived. I saw a stat that I believe in 1955 its economy was the size of that of Ghana's in sub-Saharan Africa. Now it's one of the top economies in the world. As recently as 1997, it was an economic basket case and one of the tempests in the Asian financial crisis. And it really is, it's found the religion of free trade. It really got some of its leading companies in order. You talk about Samsung being the leading LCD display manufacturer in the world. These are kind of best-in-class companies. And the United States, finally realizes that Korea is becoming one of these counterweights that's almost conceivably as important as Mexico. And so something like this has, I think, some of the political levity and the implications that we saw with NAFTA in the early 90s.
So, Sewell, in our last 20 seconds, how does this relate to the larger issues coming at the G20 summit in South Korea, which is about to start with the biggest 20 industrial nations?
Yeah, in a way, I think it's kind of been, frankly, these trade issues, as important as they are, have been almost overshadowed by this bickering that's been going on over Chinese currency interventions, the Fed's decision to pump $600 billion into the American economy. The real big issues here have been around exchange rates and about these global imbalances, with some countries persistently producing too much and others producing too little and consuming too much.
And we'll be talking about those things with some guests coming up. But Sewell Chan, New York Times reporter in South Korea with the president, and Robin Farzad from Bloomberg Businessweek, thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.